A group of Israeli settlers stormed the Al-Aqsa Mosque in the occupied Al-Quds. This ahead of a planned flag march that has drawn warnings from Palestinians. Fierce fighting reported in eastern Ukraine, where Russian forces have intensified attacks to capture more areas. And also in the headlines, Iran observing a day of national mourning for victims of the recent building collapse in the southern city of Abadan. I'm Behrouz Najafi. It's good to have you with us. In Palestine, the city of Al-Quds is on edge. Dozens of settlers protected by Israeli forces have stormed the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound ahead of a controversial flag march. Israeli forces deployed to the area have already attacked Palestinian worshippers. They've also made several arrests. Since early this morning, the Israeli military has restricted Palestinians' access to the mosque. Hundreds of worshippers have already gathered inside and outside the compound. Hamas, Islamic Jihad, and other groups have warned the Israeli marchers against passing through the Al-Aqsa compound. Israeli Prime Minister Naftali Bennett says that the march will proceed along the planned route, despite warnings from Palestinian groups to keep the parade out of Muslim neighborhoods. Israelis hold the annual event to mark the occupation and annexation of the eastern part of Al-Quds in 1967. Last year, a similar event led to an 11-day Israeli war on the Gaza Strip. Iraq has made it clear that it will never entertain the idea of normalizing relations with the Tel Aviv regime. In 2020, several Arab states, including Bahrain and the UAE, normalized ties with Israel under U.S. broker deals. Now, will Iraq's move to criminalize any form of normalization with the regime push other Arab countries to follow suit?
It's now illegal in Iraq to normalize relations with Israel. That's a law the Iraqi parliament overwhelmingly passed on Thursday. Its passage cemented the Arab country's invariable and age-old policy of refusing to recognize the occupying regime. It applies to all Iraqis, both governmental and independent institutions, as well as foreign nationals working in Iraq. In a statement, the parliament said the legislation is a true reflection of the will of the people.
At a closer inspection, the law bans any relations with the Israeli regime, including political, economic, cultural, scientific, or sports-related ties. The violators of the law will face severe penalties, including life in prison or even capital punishment. The other point is that the law was adopted unanimously, meaning that all 275 parliament members who were present voted for it. There was no opposition to the motion.
Back in 2020, the United Arab Emirates and Bahrain entered the United States brokered so-called peace deals with the Israeli regime. Some other regional states, namely Sudan and Morocco, followed suit. Other regional countries have also been fraternizing with Israel, including Saudi Arabia, which received a visit from the regime's former Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu in November 2020. The Iraqi law took effect amid widespread reports pointing to the northern Iraqi Kurdistan region's cooperation with the Israeli spy agency, Mossad.
Now, on Wednesday, Iraqi resistance groups said that the Kurdistan region's government has trained armed groups with Israeli support to create chaos and disorder in Iraq, and that only months after the semi-autonomous region hosted a conference on normalizing ties with Tel Aviv. The question is if the recently passed law is a response to Israel's attempts to infiltrate the West Asia region.
In late September last year, a U.S.-based think tank organized a conference in Iraqi's semi-autonomous Kurdistan region, sparking anger and condemnation. The regional government said the conference was not ratified by any local official and that it did not reflect the views and policies of the Kurdistan region. But the Coordination Committee of the Shia Resistance Axis, which represents Iraq's resistance groups, has recently warned Kurdistan authorities that their, quote, malicious pursuit and the fire they are trying to ignite will come back on them and burn them before it hurts others, and they will only suffer disappointment and loss.
The U.S. State Department reacted angrily to the passage of the law. It slammed the legislation as promoting anti-Semitism in Iraq and branded it as against the principles of freedom of expression. But the claims can be challenged by taking a look at the Iraqi nation's stance and votes. All Iraqis are against ties with Israel. How can it run contrary to the freedom of expression? Speaking about the anti-Semitism claim, there are Jewish citizens living in Iraq in freedom and peace and face no problems whatsoever.
Israel has gone so far as to install espionage bases in the northern Iraqi region. In March, Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps launched a barrage of missiles at targets in the region, which were said to have been secret Mossad bases, killing several Israeli operatives there. The Iranian ambassador to Iraq said Israeli operatives used the Iraqi Kurdistan region to plot and launch operations against Iran's security, emphasizing that Iranian officials had time and again warned the Kurdistan regional government's authorities against their activities, but to no avail. Palestinians have denounced the normalizations of four Arab states with Israel as a betrayal of their cause and a stab in their back. The normalization was window-dressed as helpful to the Palestinian cause, but the events that unfolded over the past 2 years have proven it to be otherwise.
Okay, let's now take a look at the situation elsewhere. The Russian military is stepping up its campaign to take over the city of Severodonetsk in eastern Ukraine. According to local officials, the city is under heavy shelling. No estimates available of the scale of damage or casualties from today's fighting. On Saturday, they said that at least 2 people died and 13 buildings were destroyed there. The Russian military says it's taken control of the nearby rail hub of Lyman in Donetsk, but according to Ukrainian officials, the city has not yet fallen. Moscow is pushing to seize the entire eastern regions of Donetsk and Luhansk, where it says it wants to protect the local pro-Russia population. It's also hitting areas farther away, including capital Kyiv, with airstrikes. Well, in the meantime, Russia has dismissed as absolutely groundless Western attempts to link the global surge in food prices to the war in Ukraine and Moscow's alleged blockade on Ukrainian ports. The Russian Foreign Ministry spokeswoman says the prices for agricultural products surged back in 2020 when the COVID pandemic caused major disruptions to supply chains. Maria Zakharova also blamed the Western sanctions on Russia as the main catalyst for the existing negative trends. She also accused the U.S. and the EU of diverting to warehouses in Europe some 20 million tons of Ukrainian grain originally meant to prevent the food crisis in African and Western Asian countries. Zakharova also said that the U.S. is provoking a food crisis in Ukraine by depleting its grain reserves through a wheat for weapons scheme. Iran is urging Turkey to respect Syria's sovereignty and territorial integrity, and that after Ankara announced plans for a new military operation in the Arab country. Iranian Foreign Ministry spokesman says that Tehran is opposed to any recourse to military action and the use of force to resolve disputes. According to Said Khatibzadeh, such measures violate the sovereignty and territorial integrity of countries and only complicate the situation. It says Iran understands Turkey's security concerns, but the only way to address those concerns is through dialogue and respect for bilateral agreements with its neighbors. Turkish President Erdogan has threatened to launch a new military operation in Syria to create what it calls a safe zone in the border area. Iran's most senior military commander has visited a secret underground army drone base. The general says that the sky's the limit when it comes to improving Iran's drone capability.
The army is enhancing its drone power at a rapid speed. New drones capable of carrying out various missions are being manufactured in Iran. Coupled with the facilities of the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps, this has created two powerful drone arms for the country.
Major General Bagheri says that only samples of Iranian drone power are on display in the ground base, and they just represent a tip of the iceberg of the Iranian military prowess. He noted that the Islamic Republic never underestimates threats and always remains vigilant. The top general got a first-hand account of Iran Army's cutting-edge capabilities in the development of different types of military, combat, and long-range drones. Images released show the Kaman 12 drone with a flight endurance of 12 hours. It's capable of carrying four domestically produced bombs and missiles. With the secret base becoming operational, Iran has turned into the top drone power in the region. Geopolitical analyst Hania Tarkian says Iran's considerable advances in drone capabilities highlight the fact that the world's balance of power is changing.
First of all, we have to say that we are witnessing a change in the balance of power in the world. So the world system is going from unipolarity and the American hegemony towards multipolarity. And more countries are trying to reach or keep their independence. And this means that they have to keep military power, and they have to improve and to update their military power. And this is why Iran is showing his military capabilities. Of course, Iran has displayed only parts of its drone capability. There is much more. But this is very important because drones are going to be very significant in modern battles. We have seen this in Ukraine, in the battles in Ukraine. So Iran has to show that his military capabilities are improving, and this is because, as I said, the balance of power in the world is changing.
In other news, Iran is observing a day of national mourning for victims of a building collapse in the southern city of Abadan. The government has declared national mourning to condole with the bereaved families. 7 days after the incident, emergency crews are still at the site, clearing up the debris. The governor says that another body was dragged from under rubble this morning, raising the number of confirmed deaths to 29. Rescue workers have also pulled dozens of people alive from the site. The unfinished Metropole building, located on Abadan's busiest street, crumbled last Monday, leaving dozens of people trapped in the ruins. Officials blame faulty construction practices for the incident. President Raisi has given assurances that whoever is responsible for the tragedy will be held accountable. A stampede at a church in southern Nigeria has left at least 31 people dead. The disaster happened on the city of Port Harcourt in Rivers State. The stampede broke out during a charity event where food was being distributed. The event was organized by a King's Assembly church. Nigeria has seen several stampede tragedies over food distribution in recent years, including an aid agency food program in North Borno State, where seven women were trampled to death last year. The UN Special Rapporteur on Afghanistan has warned about humanitarian economic crises in that country. Richard Bennett has urged the international community to continue to provide humanitarian support to Afghanistan to protect the people in the face of sanctions on the Taliban. We have a report from Kabul.
The UN Special Rapporteur on the Situation of Human Rights in Afghanistan has concluded his 11-day trip to the country. Holding a press conference in Kabul, Richard Bennett expressed concern about the violation of human rights in Afghanistan, calling on the Taliban to abide by their promises.
Afghanistan is facing a plethora of critical human rights challenges that are having a severe impact on the population. I urge the authorities to acknowledge the human rights challenges that they are facing and to close the gap between their words and their deeds.
Mr. Bennett also called for investigation into blowing terror attacks in the country, saying systematic attacks on Shia Hazaras involve marks of crimes against humanity.
I call for investigations into a series of attacks on places of worship and schools in Kabul, Kunduz, and Balkh provinces, instances of which have been claimed by the ISISK group. In particular, such attacks specifically targeting members of the Hazara, Shia, and Sufi communities are becoming increasingly systematic in nature and reflect elements of an organizational policy, thus bearing the hallmarks of crimes against humanity.
The UN expert also urged the international community to continue relief funds to Afghanistan, saying sanctions on the Taliban should not harm the Afghan people.
The humanitarian and economic crisis is very concerning, and I call on the international community to continue to provide humanitarian support and to ensure that the implementation of applicable sanctions do not substantially impede the provision of essential public services accessible to all, which are necessary for the enjoyment of human rights.
The independent expert advised the Taliban to form an inclusive government and establish fair engagement with the people if they want to end instability and suffering on Afghan soil. The UN expert's trip to Afghanistan comes as the country has been facing rights violations in different aspects. Afghan people hope their rights are protected and the international community closely watches developments in the country. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
That's all wrap for this news broadcast from Tehran. Thank you for being with us.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en. Thank you.
Aperture.
Welcome back to Aperture. In the first part, we looked into the adverse effects and potential dangers of psychotropic drugs. We went to France, the number one user of such medication, to see how psychotropic drugs prescribed much too readily and in a cocktail to cure feelings of anxiety and depression have in some cases led to madness, suicide, extreme acts of violence, and murder. Yet the root cause of the extensive use of such drugs seems to be much more than naive and ignorant doctors and desperate patients, especially when a multi-million dollar industry is at stake. Stay with us for the rest of the documentary.
In the Congress room, many conferences take place one after another, but nobody is dealing with the dangers of antidepressants. One of them is led by Anthony Rothschild, a psychiatrist well known for his successful books on psychotropic drugs. The great specialist is holding a debate on the adaptation of treatments depending on the illness. But not once does he say that antidepressants should not be prescribed. Our question is straightforward.
It seems that there is a lot of danger with antidepressants. What do you think about this? Like suicide or, murders?
No. I mean, I don't know what you're talking about, but I just told you there's no reliable scientific evidence that antidepressants cause people to commit murder or any other crime or suicide.
So how come that on boxes?
Right, this is not serious, okay?
Is this a surprising reaction? Anthony Rothschild also has conflicts of interest with an impressive number of pharmaceutical companies.
So I told you what I thought. You're going to keep asking me the same question.
Okay.
Well, you got my quote, all right?
Okay, very good.
How can such things still be said in this day and age when on all the stands promoting psychotropic medication, whole boards are covered by signs warning of side effects? Among the several side effects, the risk of suicide or violent behavior is prioritized by all. These warnings are a legal obligation enforced by medical organizations. But how much are these warnings worth next to the publicity hype from the pharmaceutical companies?
When you're depressed, where do you want to go? Nowhere. Who do you feel like seeing? No one. Depression hurts in so many ways.
These ads banned in France reach tens of millions of households in the United States, one of the rare countries where the promotion of medication is allowed. For the promoters of these ads, a new customer is a captive customer. This is what Michael Baum denounces, a lawyer specializing in the pharmaceutical industry. This man is a nightmare for the laboratories. His trials have cost them billions of dollars. His theme, denouncing the addictive effects of medication.
One of the issues with these drugs is once you're on, you can't get off. They become a captive audience. And they get trained, basically, the patients get trained to stay on it. It's if they take the drug and then stop the drug, they start experiencing these brain zaps, or they start experiencing these nausea symptoms or these severe headaches or dizziness. And then they take the drug, they take it back, they go back on it, and it goes away. Well, they get reinforced with the concept of, I need to stay on it. And they think that maybe, and what doctors used to think, was that they were relapsing back into their depression. That isn't what was happening at all.
The dangers of psychotropic drugs have been well known for a long time. Since September 1991, the American Medication Agency has had to react against waves of complaints against Prozac, the grandfather of modern antidepressants. This drug has been blamed for hundreds of suicides and murders, and administration officials are getting together to determine whether a correlation exists between Prozac and acts of violence. In front of this committee of reputed psychiatrists are the families of victims.
My husband didn't believe me. He was a pharmacist. We came back, and on April 30, he just blew his brains out in front of all of us. How many more have to die before somebody looks? If we made a mistake, we're humans.
After being on Prozac for 21 days, my wife shot and killed both of these two boys right here. She turned the gun to herself and shot herself twice. I heard these people talking about scientific data. For those that don't say we have scientific data.
I entered
therapy 1 year ago as a victim of rape. I stand before you today a victim of Prozac. It baffles my mind to think that a prescription drug I could simply compare to a felony of rape. But yes, they can be compared, because if a drug robs you of your will to live, then it has committed a felony equal to that of rape.
She shot herself on the head.
This was the date of my first...
For a whole day, witnesses will make statements. It's overwhelming.
I firmly believe the drug...
The internist...
How many more people are going to be killed and maimed before you do something? You have the power to change things. You have the power to listen to what we say and investigate what we say. We need help.
Following the statements, the committee votes.
There is credible evidence to support a conclusion that antidepressant drugs cause the emergence and or intensification of suicidality and or other violent behaviors. Those in favor of that statement vote yes. Those opposed to that statement, no.
There is total surprise. Unanimously, the committee declares that there is no link between Prozac and the violence described by the families of the victims.
Vote on the following statement.
Jeffrey Lieberman is a member of the committee. Later, he goes on to be the all-powerful president of the American Psychiatric Association. And of the 10 psychiatrists present during the vote, 9 of them had conflicts of interest with one or several pharmaceutical companies. When Prozac was launched, the Lilly Pharmaceutical Company worked very hard. But one of the board directors even denounced the methods he had himself used to boost sales of the drug. He is John Virapen, and he was director of Lilly in Sweden until 1988. And it's not his style to beat around the bush.
We are not patients, we're consumers. And we're being ripped off right, left, and center. And unfortunately, as I see it today, the drug companies have the power. Total power. They are in all corners of the industrial complex. They're in there somewhere, doing dirty work.
And you were a part of it.
And I was a part. That's why I'm able to tell you all of this. I was a part of it. I've done, my hands are dirty. I'm trying to clean now. It's redemption time.
It's time for redemption. And John Virapen has written a book with a provocative title, Side Effects, Death. Notably, it discusses the way in which he was asked to conceal side effects.
The doctors prescribe to the patient, but don't tell them anything because they don't know. They rely completely on what the pharma industry tells them. These little salesmen that run around, I was a salesman too, and they used to instruct me when I was a salesman. The first thing is, you don't talk side effects with doctors.
Why do they do that? Because they want to make money, 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 money. They don't care about your lives. They only care about their wallets.
From conferences to interviews, John Virapen does not hesitate to reveal what he implemented to encourage sales, corruption, gifts, and trips.
To children. General practitioners, they don't usually get to go to big Congress and World Congress here and there. So one day I got the idea that maybe we should do something with these guys. So I gathered a whole bunch of them and took them to Singapore. Fly them down to Singapore and gave them the works. I mean, it was exclusive. When they came back, mad sales. Escalated.
In light of these accusations, Lilly, the lab that created Prozac, did not wish to meet with us. But this is what they said by email. John Virapen has not been employed by Lilly since 1988. He therefore cannot be considered as a credible source of information concerning the current activities of the group, its motives, or practices. The Lilly Pharmaceutical Company, like all the others, nevertheless fought hard so that the American administration did not impose a black box warning on antidepressant leaflets, an explicit caution against the risks of suicide or violent behavior. But in 2004, finally, it became a done deal. This victory is owed to the activism of victims' families and their lawyers, such as Andy Vickery. The pharmaceutical industry also has a bone to pick with this Texan. He also received billions in compensation during the famous arrangements whereby laboratories preferred to pay out rather than stand trial. To better explain how a pill can kill, he makes use of a puzzle. His demonstration, he claims, applies for all psychotropic drugs.
Is there a phenomenon, a distinct phenomenon, of Prozac-induced suicide? The first attribute is the patients became suddenly suicidal. People who've never thought of killing themselves, of harming themselves, take one of these drugs, whoom, they go instantly from that feeling to death. The second piece of the puzzle was that the suicides were all violent. I've shared with you already the story of Pat Williamson. She was on Prozac 9 days when she came in one morning to her husband and said, "Honey, would you show me how to kill myself?" And her husband said, "Oh, Pat, please." And he decides to go check up on her after 15 or 20 minutes and finds that she has made 100 mutilating cuts in her body. The third piece of the puzzle that Eli Lilly noticed was an obsessive quality to the act. It's just this sudden impulse to do something really violent, really dangerous to themselves or others. And it's just, they're just overwhelmed by it. They're obsessed with the idea. And they cannot control their behavior. In the period of time between the person starts to take the drug and the time of their death or suicide attempt, that there's abnormal behavior. Something different is going on. And sometimes the medical help is, "Oh, you just need to take more of this drug. Let's increase your dose." It's like, "Oh, there's a little fire. Let's pour some gasoline on it." And the final piece of the puzzle is, almost all of the cases that I have handled, the death has happened within 30 days of the time the person either started the drug or had their dose increased.
Once again, Lilly Laboratory only answers our accusations by mail. They explain that one of the most striking studies in the last few years shows that there is a decrease in suicide, negative 32%, and in mortality, negative 49%, when depressed patients take antidepressants. But what is the truth? This study is contested by other studies that claim the contrary. And if in the United States, thousands of victims came to the forefront, then why would France be spared, the leading consumer worldwide of psychotropic drugs? In April 2014, a court trial would clarify the current state of affairs in an enlightening manner. Back in December 2008, Jean is depressed. He struggles to deal with his professional life, and at the birth of his son, he attempts suicide. He therefore went to the psychiatrist, Dr. Gossaris. The doctor recommends that he try out a new antidepressant, which was not yet available on the market, Brintellix. Jean did not react to the treatment. The psychiatrist proposed to double the dosage. A few days later, Jean set himself on fire. Corinne, Jean's wife, refused to believe that it was a random suicide. She alerted the authorities, and Dr. Gossaris was put under inspection on 7 charges. He was accused of embezzlement, but worse, putting others' lives in danger for at least 8 patients, including Jean, Corinne's husband. On April 30th, 2014, the doctor was strangely judged in Bordeaux, the court where he himself was a judiciary expert. He received a suspended sentence of 6 months that he appealed. But why would the pharmaceutical company Lundbeck, the creators of the antidepressants, not be investigated themselves? The pharmaceutical company Lundbeck has no interest in this affair going public. They've invested millions in order to get Brintellix approved by medical authorities. However, Jean was not at all the same since his dosage of Brintellix was raised, as described by Corinne and her mother. For Lundbeck, it is therefore not Brintellix that is to blame, but Jean's depression. It's a credible defense, which is used by all pharmaceutical companies when they are blamed. However, we also met with other victims of this trial period, and bizarrely, they all described the same symptoms. Such as Christian Meunier, who also tested Brintellix for 8 months. Since, he has lost his job, his memory, and he describes himself as a vegetable. A man who is no longer himself, another who commits suicide, apparently devastating side effects for 8 sufferers. But there was also the suicide of 2 more patients just after coming off Brintellix. This bad streak should have alerted the authorities. However, nothing would come of it, as on the same day as Jean's self-immolation, Dr. Gosseres wiped his name from the file. His death was therefore no longer related to the clinical tests. The medical authorities explained to us that for each test of a drug, they only receive the results achieved across the whole territory. The botched trials of Dr. Gosseres were therefore lost in the mass and mixed with several other accepted studies across the world, as this document shows that makes Brintellix's market release official. Lundbeck throws the blame back to the public health authorities. So what can be said of the package insert that we found in the United States, where Brintellix has been approved since 2013? Side effects are documented in 2 whole pages. Especially, though, the principal paragraph warns against the raised risk of suicidal thoughts and behaviors. It's the famous black box warning. In other words, the highest alert level. In France, Brintellix has just been approved for sale on the market. It has therefore been judged as useful in fighting depression. The doors are slammed shut. Jean is responsible for his own atrocious suicide. Just like the death of Mark, Aurélie's murderous thoughts and suicide attempt, or the fall of Christian Meunier. If the effectiveness of such medication on most serious depressive states cannot be denied, how many more tragedies need to occur before the effects of psychotropic drugs on some patients are truly recognized?
Seems that as long as money and power are involved in the realm of healthcare, pills that are expected to cure depression actually cause suicide and murder. And that's it for this week's program. Until next week at another Aperture, it's goodbye. Thank you.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Stories from the past. Stories from the lives of the infallibles. Stories from different parts of the world. On the Lantern.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, dear listeners. Thank you so very much for joining us on today's brand new episode of The Lantern. So today we want to talk about our story. Let's get down to business. Without beating around the bushes. Today we want to talk about a story which I think we've heard different versions of. I know I have. Without further ado, however, let's reveal the story so we can get straight to the point and, you know, deduce whatever moral it is that we need to learn from it. Here's the anecdote. Listen to it and we'll be right back.
In the name of Allah, the Most Compassionate, the Most Merciful. Dear friends, we have a nice story for this part. Thank you very much. for listening to Lantern. The Farmer and His Sons is the title of today's story. Listen to it. A rich old farmer who felt that he had not many more days to live called his sons. "My son," he said, "heed what I have to say to you. Do not on any account part with the estate that has belonged to our family for so many generations. Somewhere on it is hidden a rich treasure. I do not know the exact spot, but it is there, and you will surely find it. Spare no energy and leave no spot unturned in your search." The father died, and no sooner was he in his grave than the sons set to work digging with all their might, turning up every foot of ground with their spades and going over the whole farm two or three times. No hidden golden did they find, but at harvest time, when they had settled their accounts and had pocketed a rich profit for greater than that of any of their neighbors, they understood that the treasure their father had told them about was the wealth of the bountiful crop, and that in their industry had they found the treasure. Industry is itself a treasure.
The Lantern.
Under the light of lantern, we'll look at the story, which indicates a moral aspects of our life.
Psychology tells us that there is actually no such thing as laziness. A lot of psychologists, I think I was reading an article about it. Don't ask me the name because I can't remember. But the point is, they say that there's no such thing as laziness. Rather, there's just the lack of a sustainable motivation. You know, we don't have a driving force to push us or pull us forward. And I think a lot of that is because we don't know what we want in life. And that can be really tricky. You can feel very, very bewildered and lost and confused and frustrated with yourself. You basically feel like a plastic bag in the wind when you don't know which direction to go toward, when you don't know what you want from life, when you don't know what your objective is. And during these times, it's really important to create a sort of motivation for ourselves. Something for us to look forward to. Something that expands our energy, that when we think about it, we can feel it in our chest. Something is expanding and is slowly engulfing our body and makes us want to get up and do something about it. And this motivation can start with little steps, like baby steps. You don't necessarily have to aim for the moon from the very get-go, right? Got to be realistic. And so this motivation could just start with baby steps, right? When you want to begin getting your life together, you start with organizing your room and then your workplace. And once your surroundings, your like instant environment is organized and well arranged and tidy and clean, it helps reorganize your mind and it helps sort out your thoughts. And you'll feel less anxious, you'll feel less all over the place. And then you can slowly move forward with organizing your routine and trying your best to stick with it. And doing it just one day at a time. And your initial motivation and your initial goal can just be, let's do something that was better than yesterday, just one thing that was better than yesterday. And for some people, it works in terms of motivation to compare themselves with someone that is more successful, right? But for others, especially those who have indeed hit actual real life hardcore rock bottom. That just makes them feel, you know, more loathsome toward themselves because they feel like they're a failure. So the best thing we can do is compare ourselves with what we were yesterday, right? And that could be a good motivation as well. So basically what I'm trying to say, all of these things, well, they need effort. We need to exert the most effort we can into actualizing that motivation we've developed within ourselves and make each day count and make it slightly better than yesterday. And personally, that's the lesson that I got from this story, that every person needs a slight motivation, a slight nudge in their life. And once we put that sort of motivation and effort into whatever project we have, the collection of all of this can become a treasure. When you put it all together, when it all sums up into a bigger picture, that's the true treasure. The fact that you could get yourself out of that dark place through your own effort and will, and your motivation was, let's survive this day by doing whatever I could to make it just slightly a dial better than yesterday. And then you look back, like in hindsight, you look back and you're like, oh, well, I'm practically a different person. I've grown so much. And that's a treasure in itself, I believe. With that said, maybe this is your sign not to be so hard on yourself and find little motivations, whether from a wise person in your life, like these people had their father who unfortunately passed away, or like a good book that you read, a good movie, a good piece of poetry or art, and try to put some effort into moving a step forward, and you might find that the result of that effort you put could lead to something that you did not anticipate. And the point of all of it is that as long as you try, right? As long as you try, something is bound to happen. And something is always better than nothing. Thank you for being with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
That was all for today. Thank you very much for joining us. Inshallah, we continue this topic on the next episode. Till then, may Allah bless all of you. Fi amanillah. Ala bi dhikrillah tatma'innul
qulub. Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.